Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
We're almost at 200. What are we going to do for episode 200, Dallas?
Nothing. Probably just a podcast or something.
Yeah, but I feel like we should have a party. Can we have a party? Can we have like a Zoom party?
We could absolutely do a Zoom party and invite all of our closest Zoom friends.
Yeah. We should do something for 200. I feel like that's a pretty big accomplishment to make it 200 episodes without getting canceled. I've been on podcasts that have been canceled before. It's not fun.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't know what that's like. I feel like we've done a decent job up to this point. And there, You're right. There is something maybe we should do. I feel like we just debauchery, complete and total debauchery. We tweet out the Zoom link, and whoever wants to go, you want to show up, you want to get crazy. I don't have a care in the world. Let's just fucking celebrate. Just 30 minutes of complete and utter chaos on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, how many people can make it into a Zoom call at one time?
According to the classes that I tried to check in on the other day, roughly only 300. So if you are not one of the first 300 people in those classes, Jared, if they're being held on Zoom anyway.
Is it really that high?
I know that you kind of have to, like, you're virtually sitting outside of the classroom.
Is it really, you can really get 300 people in there?
Well, I was that, wait, hold on. Is what that?
The quantity of participants in a Zoom call.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm here to tell you that the cutoff is... In my experience, is 300. So me as the 301st potential attendee to the Zoom class, I was not allowed in.
Got it. Fantastic. So some things happened yesterday, Major League Baseball. You had the Brewers, Reds, Mariners, Padres, and Dodgers, Giants, who chose to not play their games. As a way to protest the racial injustice in this country. And I threw a tweet out there because I've seen all this stuff, like feedback from people. In the most recent incident, like people want to discredit the whole central point because of the character of the individual involved. And while those points may be valid, that's why I said, and I made a point to say immediately, there was like the second sentence, this is not about one incident. Right. This is about this being a thing that has happened for many years and continues to happen. So it's not just about this one incident that happened recently. It's about the scope of all of it. And I knew that, I mean, like, it's Twitter. So, like, there's obviously a lot of fucking idiots on Twitter. And there's people that are only on Twitter. Their existence is to just argue and debate and...
argue. Not debate. Argue. You have it the just, first time. Debate, yeah. Debate, you're looking... Debate involves civil discourse. And debate involves you actually having a desire to potentially have yourself either proved wrong or enlightened.
Yeah.
And that is a choice that a lot of folks just are choosing not to make, to where you become enlightened or educated.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's why, like, I don't think I responded to anybody. I think I responded to one person there. I think there was one person who, like, responded and was like, oh, so you support child rapists. And I was like, read literally the second sentence where I say, this is not about one incident that happened recently.
Right.
Second sentence of the whole thing. That so that's why I was like, I'm just going to say what I want to say, and I'm going to sit back and let the internet do its thing. Like, I'm too exhausted at this point, like from all of this and from everything else that's gone on. I mean, there's been so many fucking things that have happened recently just in the world where I'm going to say what I want to say, because I think I was debating whether or not I was going to say anything at all. And then I got a message from someone from the grounds crew being like, "Hey man, big fan, Rockies fan. You know, like, love what you and Dallas do, but I find it disappointing that you're just ignoring what's going on right now with like the Brewers and Reds not playing." And I was like, "Honestly, dude, I'm not ignoring it. I'm taking my time to choose the right words." Like, I think all too often, especially on Twitter, something will happen and there is validity to the point of, I mean, you're going to get the most engagement if like this story comes out and you're one of the first people to make a quick joke about it. And I was like, this is not that. Like, this is not like I need to be first to this. This is a real life scenario. Real shit's happening in the world. Real people that we admire as athletes are hurting. Like, I mean, legitimately hurting. So I need to take the time to choose my words carefully, and I hope that you respect that. And he was, "You know, man, like, cool. I appreciate that stance." So I did take my time, and I did think about what I wanted to say and how I wanted to present it. And then once I was ready to put it out there, I put it out there. And I was like, I'm not responding to like the feedback. Like, a lot, I mean, I would say the feedback was probably 95% positive, but it's only human nature to look at that 5% of people being like, "Well, fuck you," or "I'm unfollowing," or like, "Here's my woke counter to that about how you're wrong for feeling the way that you do." It's like, I'm not entertaining anyone who wants to tell me that I'm wrong for the way that I feel. Like, this is how I feel. That's how you feel. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong for how you feel. I'm just not going to combat any of that. If you want, like, if people are going to come at me and be like, "You can't be silent on this," okay, I won't be silent. Here's how I feel. And if you disagree, that's fine. If you want to unfollow, that's fine too. But I couldn't in good conscience say nothing.
No, that is exactly where we find ourselves today, is wanting to talk about the cool and fun stuff surrounding our game, surrounding baseball. But we also understand there's a lot of other things that factor in to our game being played, being produced, going on. And that really starts with the individuals who allow the game to exist. The folks who put the game on from a production standpoint, the players who have to go out and play the game, those are all things that we would love to be talking about. There's a saying, Jared, or like a phrase, judge, jury, and executioner, right? Judge, jury, and executioner. I'm not the judge, jury, and executioner. Just think about the order in which those words are said in that phrase. Judge, jury, executioner. So to your point about not getting caught up in the character of the individual involved in the incident, let's go back to the point of something else happening and needing to raise awareness. This has been happening and hasn't stopped happening for 400 plus years. And so every time an incident like this occurs and people want to blow right past what has happened and immediately land on who the perpetrator was, the character of this perpetrator, the crimes committed in the past of this perpetrator, we want to go right to that. And we want to blow past the judge part. We want to blow past the jury part. And we want to go right into being the executioner. And so the question that's being asked by people of color, by Black people in America, is why is it okay for the police officers to be the judge, to be the jury, and the executioner all at one time when it comes to dealing with people of color? That is the question that is being asked. And if you're paying attention, or if you've done what a lot of us have tried to do, and that's educate yourself on what's going on, then you have had your eyes opened to how long Black Americans have been dealing with issues that you and I were probably never even considering for a large portion of our time on Earth. And they are here and they are real. And now the distractions that we have utilized to take us away from having to face these types of gross injustices and realities, now those distractions, a la sport, baseball, basketball, football, now they're converging. And as much as we like to be able to pick and choose when we have to face our realities, the reality is the dreamscape of sport, the escape of distraction, that window is closing. And it's because the people that are in charge of or involved in playing those games that provide those distractions, when you stare at that jersey running up and down the court and you see the name on the back and the name on the front, what you need to start seeing is the soul that fills that jersey out. Because those are the individuals that are hurting. The people that wear the baseball uniforms, the helmets on the football field, all of those men and women are the ones who are hurting, just like you. Unfortunately, when they are done with playing and they're off the court and off the field, that same distraction that you and I are seeking, they are also seeking. But do you understand that they do not have the privilege to unzip themselves and walk around in a color of skin that does not put them in the crosshairs of the people who they feel are supposed to protect them, the people that we know are supposed to protect them? And when you've had enough, this is what happens. And it has been going on long enough where we are finally starting to feel the effect of the blur of society and the landscapes which we desire to seek and escape in, and that is sport. And that's why I tweeted out, the idea of just shutting up and dribbling is long gone. Long gone. Because the people who are a part of the worlds that we seek to find those distractions are suffering, not only physically, but emotionally as well. So again, Jared, you make a great point about just, let's not think about the character of this specific individual. Let's think big picture here, and let's think about the pain that an entire group of people is going through. And I find it heartbreaking that anytime someone would vocalize their opinion about racial injustice and not wanting to see the judge, jury, executioner play out in real time, that shouldn't be the easiest and quickest way to find out who's a racist or to find out who's a bigot. But it's unfortunate that it seems like the minute somebody takes a stand, that's the quickest way to unearth people who really aren't looking to be a team player.
So one of the points that I kind of wanted to make here, and why I'm so okay with the teams that were protesting last night by not playing. When George Floyd happened, I did an episode of Section 10 with Coley. And I mean, he's been all over this stuff for a long time. And admittedly, like, I think like the George Floyd murder, the first one that struck me to the point where it's like, all right, what the fuck are we doing, like, as a society? And Coley asked me the question on the air, straight up, like, what, why this one? Like, what was so different about this one? And I was like, honestly, because I think with like quarantine and everything out, like, there were no sports, like, that's all there was nothing else going on. It was like, this happened, there's video, it's everywhere, and there's nowhere to hide. Like, there's no like, oh wow, like, that really sucks, but anyways, all right, so the Brewers are on tonight. Like, that wasn't happening. And it wasn't happening for weeks, months after that happened.
You're forced to digest it.
Right. So it's just in your face and it stays in your face. And then you're left with nothing more than to just be like, this is fucking horrible. Like, how does stuff like this happen? Like, how do we allow stuff like this to happen in a society? And then it happens again and sports are back. Or are they? Because now, after George Floyd, you're seeing more athletes being like, fuck this. Like, I'm using my voice. I'm using my platform. Like, we're in a generation now where you don't need, like, the best player in your favorite sport doesn't need to run to ESPN to give a quote if they want to reach the world with their words. They have it right at their fingertips with their phones. They can make videos. They can post whatever they want on their Twitter and their Instagram. So when you start to see, you know, we talk about, oh, well, you're just an athlete. You're just an athlete. It's like, not really. I mean, like, you're an influencer.
They're
like, you have
human beings.
Yes, but it's like these people have millions and millions and millions of followers. So while we, you know, might look at them as like, oh, well, you're just an athlete. Like, what do you know? It's like, well, athletes now have some of the most amplified voice in our society. So, and like we've also seen before, sports, I think it was Doolittle that said, like, sports are the reward for a functioning society. Yes. And when you have teams, and I want to point out the Dodgers, because Mookie Betts was like, you know what? I'm not playing tonight. And a guy like Clayton Kershaw, white dude, is like, all right, well, fuck. If Mookie's not playing tonight, like, how do I do something to show support for him and his cause that's actually tangible? Like, what can I do to help out and show that I'm in this guy's corner? All right, well, we're shutting this thing down. You know, Dodgers don't play last night. You know, that was like a team decision. The Mariners have the most black players in Major League Baseball. They don't play last night. The Brewers are in Wisconsin, the site of where the most recent incident happened. They don't play. So I get that, like, you know, last night there were start times where teams were like, fuck, I mean, we have to make a decision in 45 minutes. Like, our game's in 45 minutes. How are we going to just shut this shit down? So I'm not looking at teams being like, oh, you played? You're racist. Like, no, that's not this at all.
No.
I just look at the Dodgers specifically as like a, I think it was Kenley Jansen, Dave Roberts, Clayton Kershaw, Mookie Betts did a press conference last night.
Yep.
Where that was, they took you behind the scenes of the thought process. Mookie Betts, despite, like, I don't even think it's a matter of like, he's the best player in the league. So like, if he wants to shut it down, then we shut it down. Like, no, Mookie is a black man in Major League Baseball who said, I need to send a message that, And I forget, I would love to attribute this thought to whoever it is that I saw have this original thought. It's not my own, but it makes all the sense in the world. If you're not down to support our cause, you don't get to enjoy our talent.
Amir Garrett said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, if you can't understand or you can't understand who I am as a human being and you can't appreciate the fact that I bleed and that I care about things, and that I have an opinion and I have a platform, if you can't appreciate that and accept me at that, then you don't deserve me for the performance I put forth on the mound.
Yeah.
Because you are just a fan of the sport and the production. You're not a fan of me as a human being. You're not a fan of what I might care about. And that's your choice as a fan. But I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to find that you're in the minority. You are in the minority if you cannot get on board with the individuals who you are applauding and cheering for. If you can't take 5 minutes to try to understand that they're human beings, you are missing out.
Yeah. I'm so happy that it was Amir Garrett that said that. I fucking love him. But yeah, I mean, that, at that point, if that doesn't hit home with you, like, where it's like, oh, come on, like, just get out there and play. It's your job. Like, I wish I could take a day off of work and still get paid for it. Like, there's those people out there where it's like, dude, that's not the point.
But those are the ones you can't rationalize with, Jared. Those are the ones that you can't engage on Twitter because they're never going to respond to a comment you make. They're just going to continue to gaslight. They're going to go in a different direction, raise another argument. They're just going to continue to agitate, and they're not here for that conversation. Like I said, for that civil discourse. And what's funny is the people who clamor for sports and say the things you said. We need this back. Athletes, just shut up and play. Blah, blah, blah. We need you. We need your distraction. Listen to yourself. You are begging for somebody to come along and bury your head in the sand for you. And in my opinion, it's time to ask yourself, why? Well, we know why, because it's really easy if you have the privilege to turn the other cheek and to not feel the effect of what's going on. Your problem now is that in the world that you felt like you could escape all of this outside noise in, your baseball world or your basketball world, that's all now being infiltrated, isn't it? You're starting to realize that the players that you cheer for, they're human beings, and they have thoughts, and they have feelings, care about things outside of winning your baseball game for you at home. They actually care about being able to drive to the ballpark and not worried about getting pulled over because of the color of their skin. And collectively, they're tired of it. Collectively, they are taking a stand for it. And you're now starting to see people who don't look like them. They're brown, their white brothers and sisters are also standing up with them. And it's unfortunate that it feels like that's where the problem, that's what we're upset about, is more like, because it almost feels like you'd be okay if just the black folks stood up, said their piece, protested, and then went on about their business, right? But now it seems like the larger group of people that are getting together, that are actually preventing some of these games from going on, wow, this is real protest that's sparking real conversation, or at least attempting to. There's no avoiding that now.
Did you go ahead?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you happen to see Uncle Cliffy on MLB Network last night?
Yeah, man.
I mean, drilled it.
Look, well, and Uncle Cliffy on MLB Network, Dom Smith, and that's why I tweeted that out. How can you watch the video of Dominic Smith talking about the pain he's feeling, coming to tears, man, in a room full of strangers for him? How do you watch that and not have 30 seconds inside of you to step back and just question why he feels that way? Because if you don't know why he feels that way, the next step to trying to understand is listening and then asking some questions and really trying to open up your mind to gain some perspective. And if all you're going to talk about is he was guilty, he's a criminal, he's a horrible person, that should have happened, blah, blah, blah. Look, we go back to the judge, jury, executioner stuff. That's what they're questioning, is why are they treated? Why are black people, why are people of color treated differently when it comes to the policing of our society?
Yeah. I don't know if MLB Network clipped off what Cliff Floyd was talking about, but if they did, go back, look for it, watch it. He was talking about just, you know, running a stop sign and being like, I ran a stop sign like a week or so ago, and you know, the cops pulled me over and they called for backup, and they're like shining a flashlight in my car, and like, you know, you're fearing for your life as a black man. And it's like, as a white dude, I never have to think about it.
You know, here, you're on the East Coast. Winter is coming. And with that comes snowstorms. Jay Hay and I work with an individual at ESPN, Doug Glanville, who one winter day was shoveling his driveway. Jared, shoveling snow in his driveway, stopped by a cop and harassed. A black man in Connecticut shoveling snow in his own driveway is stopped by police and questioned and harassed. Why? Jared, I can guarantee you have never been stopped by a cop while shoveling snow in your own driveway.
Nope.
And what you would need to do to understand where Doug Glanville is coming from is listen to him and let him tell you his story, and then take your own experiences and match those up with him. and see what the difference is. Because the common denominator is you guys are human beings. But the separating factor is you look very differently. And that right there is the only difference between Doug Glanville being stopped for shoveling his own fucking driveway and you getting a honk from the cop who drives by your house while you are shoveling snow in your own driveway. That is what these players and these people who you are choosing not to try to understand are trying to get you to understand. And imagine them doing it in about as peaceful of a way as they could by just physically not performing a skill set that you have been begging them to go out and perform so that you can be distracted from the social injustices that you do not have to deal with.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it sounds like, I think it just came across here. Dodgers are going to play a doubleheader today. So yes. for those that are, I think Kershaw's going game one. For those that are like, how long is this going to continue? Other teams going to join in? I would say the Brewers were team number one. Like that's kind of like where it starts at the top. You know, the Mariners, again, most black players in Major League Baseball, but then Mookie Betts, the premier black player in Major League Baseball. If the Dodgers are playing today, then I wouldn't, because I know a lot of people, I was like tweeting out, I mean, I addressed the situation. But then I just continued with my night. You know, I'm like, I'm tweeting highlights and talking about all the games that are going on. And people were like, well, it doesn't matter. The season's getting canceled anyway. Like, this is just going to spiral and other teams are going to sit out. And it doesn't appear to be the case. So we will continue to have Major League Baseball. But in that same regard, we will continue to have these discussions. And when we had the first starting nine after the George Floyd incident, murder, we said that. You know, it wasn't just lip service where we're like, all right, we're going to spend a whole show talking about it. And you know, we're going to continue these conversations. Like that wasn't just like, we'll definitely talk about it still. It's like, no, we will continue to talk about it.
These conversations will be as prevalent as the acts in our society are. That's something that I think we should all just understand. Mm-hmm. As this stuff continues to happen, we will continue to address it. And if you're listening right now and you feel like that's not something you can continue to stay on board with, I'm really sorry to see you go. But understand one thing is, yeah, listenership, that affects Jared's life. That affects my life. That affects our livelihood, right? But I would much rather be able to look the individuals who allow us to do our job the way we do it, I'd much rather be able to look them in the eye and them understand that we understand.
Right.
And them know that we get it, because as this game evolves, Jared's been throwing out the number 300%+ viewership growth between 18 and 35.
Almost 400.
That's insane, you guys. That's insane that you guys have latched on to the game the way that you have. That is fucking amazing. Now, I promise you, we can have that same kind of impact with social injustices if we just listen. Let's be the fucking teammate that we all have wanted to be. For those who don't get to strap it on anymore, this is our opportunity to be the teammate. You can still have an impact. I promise you, you can.
Yep.
So to that point of ignoring this stuff, that's not going to be what we do.
No.
We're going to continue to talk about this. And we take cues not only from our own experiences, but from the players as well. Christian Yelich said it beautifully yesterday. You can only put on so many fucking t-shirts. You can only protest so many times. I can only go to so many marches out here, Jared. I can only do that shit so often and so much before you have to take action. And even showing up to the protests and wearing your shirts or whatever it is, that's no longer enough. It's just not enough. It's having these conversations and just giving people an idea that, look, we're here for the game of baseball. We're here for each other.
Yep. So we'll see what happens from here in terms of the response, because I know, like, over here in Boston, it's a weird spot because, you know, a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr. being the only black player on the team, and the Red Sox still play, but it was like a 6:40 start. So, like, by that time, like, the Mariners and Padres had announced that they weren't playing, and the Dodgers and Giants hadn't announced. So you would assume that the Brewers would have followed suit after the Bucks. But then you had like a guy like Matt Kemp, who sits out with the Rockies, Jason Hayward with the Cubs, individual players sat out. Jackie didn't sit out. And, you know, for anyone that's wondering why, it's like, he's a baseball player, you know, he's a baseball player. And as much as I'm sure he appreciates the opportunity to have a platform and to speak out and to shine light on situations like these, I'm sure the first thing he wants to do is to just be Jackie Bradley Jr., just be a baseball player. Yep. Yeah, he doesn't want to be a black player. He wants to be a player, you know? And when something like this happens in the world, it must be exhausting to, in addition to being the center fielder for the Boston Red Sox, to also then have to be the front-facing spokesperson for black baseball players, a representative of one of the most like famous sports franchises in the world. Every time one of this happens, like, you're the spokesperson. Why? Oh, just because of the color of my skin. Like, I didn't sign up for this. This wasn't an appointed position. There was no election for this. Like, there's no application process. Like, I'm just here. I'm the only black dude on the team. And I'm the longest tenured member of the Boston Red Sox too, by the way. So that must be exhausting for him. And I don't think, like, if he wants to play, I don't think that it should be viewed as not having any sort of solidarity with the players who didn't play. I think he just wants to be looked at as a baseball player.
That's why those conversations that you're hearing about occurred. That's why groups of players from teams are meeting, is because those are the conversations that are happening. Yeah, you want to know, if you do go and play, am I being viewed differently by other black players across the game? If I go and strap it on, do they feel like I don't have their back? So that's why those conversations were being had, is because, for one, nobody's just going to make that ultimate call. Like, Clayton Kershaw, the starting pitcher yesterday, isn't going to be the one to just walk off and go, I'm not pitching, so nobody's playing. That's not how that goes. That's not how teams operate. And so it's great to see that those conversations are happening, you know, across the clubhouses, because that is another sign of the level of unity that is occurring. Folks are getting together. They're not just making these decisions on their own. This is a collective thought.
Right. So, you talked about Dom Smith being in tears after the game. David Ross was also in tears after the game, talking about, like, I can't even imagine the hurt and the pain that a guy like Jason Hayward must be feeling. And it goes beyond just the, I am a manager and this is one of my players. They are former teammates as World Series champions together.
Boys.
Yes. This is a very tight personal relationship, that these two individuals have with each other. So, as far as, like, will it continue? The Dodgers are playing a doubleheader today. I haven't seen anything about the Brewers yet. Will teams or players that didn't participate yesterday feel obligated to participate today? That, as the time of this recording, remains to be seen as well. But like I said before, and to echo the sentiment of Amir Garrett, if you're not down to support their cause and see how all they want is to just be treated fairly and like equals to each and every one of you, then why do you get to enjoy their talents? Like, why criticize them for being like, oh, so you're just not going to show up for work? Like, what if I didn't show up for work, I get fired? It's like, that's not what's going on here. Like, it's not the same thing at all.
Just can't even, but that's why, like, don't waste your energy and don't waste your time trying to fight that fight on the internet, my friend.
Yeah.
That is not the battleground for it.
Yeah. What a weird transition this is going to be. Infertility is a huge problem for guys and things that don't get better as we age. Daddy's mission, and that's spelled D-A-D-I, by the way, their mission is to make the process of fertility testing and sperm banking as comfortable, convenient, and cost-effective as possible. No more visits to the sperm bank and masturbating in awkward rooms. What would you define as an awkward room? Like, what's like a standard room, and then what would be like an awkward room to masturbate in?
Like maybe the coat room at a theater.
That's a non-awkward room.
No, well, when you're giving your coat to people, there.
Well, if the coat taker's still waiting there.
The waiting room at a doctor's office.
Yeah, that would be an awkward. Yep. Yeah. Or an elevator.
Is that a room? That's more like a vehicle.
I don't even know that's a vehicle. I think an elevator is almost its own species.
Subspecies. I mean, yeah, I've got to go in vehicle. I've got to be in a vehicle because it's an A to B thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're choosing a vehicle, I mean, you could get your walk-up song changed real quick.
Oh, I don't want to say that I've started a skin fire. There have been skin fires in one of those big Ferris wheels. There you go.
Oh, Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
I don't hate that idea.
Yeah. I mean, I had an audience, so it's not like it wasn't just a solo gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's great because, you know, there's no more visits to the sperm bank and masturbating in awkward rooms. Like I guess you can't no more masturbating on a Ferris wheel.
Yeah, the DMV be a bad spot too.
Nah, I feel like more people are just like angry, so I don't know that people would be like
they'd understand.
Yeah, they'd enjoy the break in monotony.
Could you imagine just firing one off and someone walks up to you just, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" And you show them your little placard. It's like Z36, and then they look up and it's like, "Oh, now serving A3." Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Go on about your business.
Yeah. You're going to be here for a while, so pretty tense. Daddy has developed an at-home sperm collection kit allowing you to test and store your sperm from the comfort of your home. Daddy takes your sperm, tests it, and stores it for you so you don't have to worry about a thing and never have to leave your home. These services at sperm banks usually cost thousands of dollars. Daddy provides an at-home collection kit, a lab-tested fertility report, and a year of sperm storage for $199. Daddy will be providing a special limited-time offer to the Barstool community of $50 off your first purchase. Ooh, that is a deal.
It sure is.
Go to daddykit.com. That's D-A-D-I kit.com to order your kit and enter the promo code starting 50 during checkout. That is daddykit.com starting 50. All right.
At home sperm collection kit.
Yeah.
Also known as your significant other.
Oh,
hey-o.
Our guy, Dallas, our boy, Lucas Giolito, no hit the Pittsburgh Pirates the other night.
Wow.
I couldn't have been fucking happier. I was happier.
Fucking glued to my ceiling, Jared. I was trying to watch that game through fingers, like through a mirror. I didn't want to make direct contact with the screen itself for fear that I would fuck that up. I was very nervous. You actually, I believe you sent a text to Jay Hay and I,
mm-hmm.
just sort of, you know, putting it on notice.
All I said was Gio.
Right.
I didn't even say his name.
Yeah, you said Gio, and then I sent the fucking monkey with his hands over his ears emoji, like, stop it. Don't say it. I don't want to hear it. Don't say it. And look, you can put it out in the world. Okay. You can put that energy out there, get people to tune into the game, but I don't want to hear certain words when we're talking about that. And you've done a great job of that, Jared. That was a phenomenal job by you.
Yeah. I learned my lesson.
Yeah.
I learned the power that I have, with my Twitter machine. All I said when Kenta Maeda had the no-hitter going, I was just like, put on the Twins game. Like, I would say it's a good time to tune into the Twins game. I didn't say no-hitter. I didn't apply anything. I just said now might be a good time to put on the Twins game.
Understandable.
And then he lost it. But with Lucas Giolito,
did you watch how much of the game did you watch?
The whole game.
Okay.
Yeah. Giolito gets a 40-inch TV every start. So I mean, like, obviously I'm not watching every single pitch, but the game was on from first pitch on. So this was something that I treated differently. Like, Kenta Maeda, I'm not a Twins fan. I don't have a personal connection to Kenta Maeda. So I was like, hey, tune into the Twins game. Something's going on. And with Lucas Giolito, I'm like, I didn't say a fucking word. I didn't tweet about him at all. Nothing, not a word. And I think, like, going into the ninth inning, all I tweeted was, I'm so fucking nervous. That's all I tweeted.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I tweeted, I think I'm going to pass out.
Yeah.
Like, I was just, you can feel it. You can feel the energy start to mount, dude. And I was talking to the guys on Redline yesterday about it. Like, I've called Mike Fiers no hitter, and I, like, had to turn around and not watch the fucking ninth inning. I'm, like, broadcasting a Major League Baseball game while not looking at it. I'm staring at a garbage can or whatever. Same thing with Sean Manaea when he absolutely embarrassed the Red Sox here.
They were so embarrassed that year.
I couldn't watch. Just, that game specifically was very embarrassing when a Major League team shows up and gets no fucking hits and has the audacity to bring their bat to the plate with them and still get no hits. That's embarrassing. And I couldn't watch the game. It's almost like, am I watching this? Is that going to fuck it up if I pay attention? So you get so nervous. And watching Giolito from early on, like, you could tell, like, I watch guys and how they start to, you know, how they start to move in between pitches on the mound. Like, there's a certain rhythm that guys fall into. And you could see him just sort of physically settle in to what he was doing early on in that game. Like, to the point where he's taking his sign, and instead of just standing there stoically, you could almost see him, like, mentally hunting the hitter. Like, just put the fucking finger down already so I could throw it through you, all right? Just fucking give it to me. And he did. And that's why I asked you if you watched the whole game or how much of the game, because
he shook off McCann once.
One time.
And he even said he was like, I don't even think I should have done it that one time.
Yeah. One time he shook him off. Mm-hmm. And that, like, one of the most fascinating parts, and what I hope folks catch on or latch on to when he said this, is he talked about going up after the seventh inning and looking at the lineup and taking a look at who.
Oh, yeah. When Josh Bell comes up.
Right. And he said, after I realized who was coming up, I said to myself, like, this is very doable. This is attainable. Like, this is it. Absolutely. And that's not a knock on the Pirates players. That's not what that is. That is a testament to how locked in he was, to how confident he was in what was about to go down over the next two innings because of what he had felt over the first seven. And to your point about not shaking the can off except for one time throughout that entire ball game, that is what that comment meant, is that was the window into his mindset in the seventh inning when you are asking guys, hey, when did you know? Hey, well, that's when he told you. And when you are asking, what were you thinking? He just told you. I'm looking to seal the fucking deal here.
Yeah.
I saw it in the seventh inning. I saw what my future held. And it was me shoving it up their ass for the next six outs. There was no chance it was going to go any differently at that point. And I'm so glad he shared that. I'm so glad he said that, because a lot of times you just get the, oh, yeah, you know, just trying to stay focused and didn't want to make a mistake. And no, he's like, yo, I saw the lineup. It was a fucking done deal. And I made it so.
Yeah. And think about like how efficient you have to be as a starting pitcher to throw 101 pitches and also 13. Strike out 13 batters. Jerry. Like that is that's surgical shit to be able to do that. Like if you're, I mean, think about like 101 pitches, like most 13 strikeout performances, you're like, all right, 7 innings, best case scenario to go out there, no hit a team, 9 innings, complete game shutout, 1 walk. Like that's it. That's it. So, yes, I think for a guy like Lucas Giolito to be able to go out there and, you know, having led the league in earned runs, and I believe, was it walks too in the same year? Did he lead the league in walks?
Buddy, he went from, I mean, this is what's great too. Remember the conversation, like I couldn't find the clip in time, but 2018, he gets his brains beat in. And he admitted that to us when we saw him the first time in spring training, spikes up tour, right? And he goes on, as you just pointed out, to lead the fucking free world in earned runs. He also led the free world in free passes. Those two things together are not really good, like, at all. And so when we sat down and talked to him, I said, hey, G, you ever thought about, like, with your stuff, you ever thought about just, like, throwing more strikes, maybe not walking so many people? What do you think? I feel like you'd be good if you did that. He's like, yeah, you know, let's give that some thought. And he did. And he finished fucking sixth in the Cy Young voting, Jared.
Yeah.
And now
we're going for top three this year. We're going for top three, maybe even top two.
And now we're talking about him no hitting a major league team. Like that's fuck yeah.
I mean, the starting nine rub is, I mean, I don't know how we don't get agents being like, okay, Dallas, Jared, how does $500,000 each sound to get my client on the podcast?
Well, not
like
only
once. Like, that's a lottery ticket. To have the dude on the podcast who led the league in earned runs and walks, and then have him go on to be one of the best pitchers, if not a top three, top two pitcher in the American League right now. And once he came on the podcast, we had the conversation with him, and, like, I totally bought in. Like, there's some guys that, like, when they talk about, like, themselves and their change in philosophy, and I tweak this and I'm doing this differently, it's like, all right, yeah. But with Giolito, I was just like listening to him talking, and I was like, this fucking guy's gonna do it. I was like, I fucking believe every word of this guy, what he's saying.
You could feel the turnaround. You could honestly feel, and I'm not saying you were giving me shit for wanting to talk to Giolito, but there was a point in time before we sat down with him the first time where you were like, what is it about, like, what is it about Giolito? And I'm like, dude, I've been on this dude for a minute. Like, his shit has been filthy. And I see somebody who I believe has the capacity to unlock and become a force. And then we sit down with them, and as you've said, you can hear and you can start to understand why he's had the success he's now had. Because there's no quit. There's no giving up. There is a relentless pursuit of maximizing what's inside of him. And when you talk to guys and you sit down with guys and you can feel their energy, that's the shit that you're looking for, is the conviction in their voice, the conviction in their words. And that's where the difference between lip service and reality comes into play, is I can feel you meaning what you say to me, or I can feel you just sort of going through the Rolodex in your head and saying some shit that you think sounds good. Like, I know the difference.
Yeah.
And Giolito, you can fucking cut it with a knife.
Right. Yeah. Now he knows what the fuck is up, and I'm very happy for him. And it's been awesome to, you know, get in at the ground level of his success as a guy that, you know, you hone in on and pay close attention to on his start day. You know, there's certain guys where they have their come ups and you don't really start to notice them until they're at somewhere near the top or at the top, the peak of their come up. But to get in at the ground level where he was coming off a horrible year, and to get to talk to him before the season started last year and then see the season that he had in 2019 and what he's doing this year to, you know, I'm sure that like Chicago people, like the media that covers the White Sox probably isn't as rampant or I guess like in your face as other markets like Philly, New York, Boston, whatever. But if Giolito were in a market like that, New York, Boston, Philly, I'm sure the narrative would have been like, okay, so we saw an awful season. We saw a great season. Now what are we going to get? Like, well, what does that season look like?
I tell you what we're going to continue to get, because there is something to learning how to finish ball games as a starting pitcher. And if I'm not mistaken, last year he threw his first complete game. Mm-hmm. And I think he threw fucking three of them, Jerry. He threw two shutouts, I believe. So you're now seeing a guy who is starting to understand how to take his stuff from the first song of the dance all the way to the moment where they turn the lights on and tell you got to go pick up your credit card. Like, he's figured out how to last the entire night on the dance floor. And that is a very, very special learned skill, especially when you start to think about the weapons this dude has, because it's not like he's Greg Maddux trying to piece together, you know, fine location with ridiculous movement. And no, it is with horsepower, but it is also at times with surgical precision. And that is what you should be scared of if you're an opponent. And that's what should have you salivating if you're a fan of the White Sox and a fan of Lucas Giolito, because you've got a dude now who, and I said this to him this year, every time you take the mound, you are somebody with your stuff who has the ability to make something very special happen every 5 days. And now that he's really figuring out how to pitch on a different level, this to me is just a flash, just a glimpse of what I feel can become consistent performances for Giolito.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not telling you he's going to throw fucking five no-hitters in the season, but no. I'm telling you, like, 8 innings, 12 punch-outs, 2-hit baseball, complete game, 1-hit shutouts, 7 innings, 15 punch-out. That's, I don't want to call it the norm, but that's going to start to be the expectation out of this dude.
Yeah.
And it should be.
And you know what? Here's a point that we haven't even made yet. You know what's going to be fucking awesome?
Tell me right now.
The White Sox making the postseason and Giolito getting a little taste of October this year.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
You have no... Because it almost feels like that this is an opportunity for these younger dudes. Like, all right, they're passing out postseason experience right now. Who wants some? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of guys who are going to be poised to take advantage of that very situation. And as scary as this White Sox lineup could be, dude, you start to give guys like Giolito, start to give these guys some fucking, Jared, look out, bud.
Yeah. He's an old soul. Like, I feel like he, cause you know, he's a chill dude. Married. You know, I think do they have a dog? I think they get a dog.
They have a dog.
He's 26. Like Lucas Giolito feels like he could be my older brother, but he's 26. I'm 31. He's just that type of dude that I feel like he's got it figured out. Like, he's in a good spot right now where, you know, you got your personal life set. You got your career set. You got your fucking hair set. I mean, he's got it all. I had this debate on radio, probably like 2 years ago, maybe. People thought I was full of shit because I said I wouldn't trade lives with Justin Timberlake. I was like, I wouldn't. I was like, I like my life. I enjoy the things that I have in my life. I pretty much have everything that I want. I'm in a good spot. So I wouldn't trade lives with Justin Timberlake. They're like, bullshit, blah, blah, blah. You know who I would trade lives with?
Lucas Giolito.
I'd trade lives with Lucas Giolito. I'd get 5 years back on the clock and be a stud in the big leagues and have awesome hair and still have my monster contract ahead of me. I'd still have that to look forward to. I'd take that.
I feel like this is more about you having somebody that would consistently consent to having sex with you.
Right.
And then the potential for a child to come out of that. I feel like that's what you trading lives with Lucas Giolito is more about.
Well, it's legally binding. Marriage is legally binding. So I feel like that's one of those things where if that's on the table, and then I would also have a chance to be a younger dad too.
I see you working.
Yeah.
Trying to be cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to not have a walker at my kid's high school graduation.
Oh, that's a bad look. If you think I'm not doing fucking cake stands on graduation day, you're out of your goddamn mind.
Yeah. You're going to be that dad. You're going to be the parents weekend for when your kids are seniors in college. You're going to be, people are going to be, they're going to be confused if you go there or not.
Yeah, hold on. You're the, so why is he in handcuffs? Is that your dad?
Is that your dad?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my dad. Can't fucking wait.
You know, Clev's back.
Yes, he is.
Clev's back. The Indians are playing a series against the Minnesota Twins right now. It's very good showdown. Very good measuring stick. Let's see who's got the bigger dick in the AL Central type series. Clev came back 6 innings, 8 hits, but limited the damage to just 2 earned runs, only walked 1 and struck out 6. He gave a home run to Kepler there in the first inning. So I don't know. Maybe that's just some rust coming back. But it's also not really, there's no shame in giving up a bomb to Max Kepler these days. What'd you like from Clev? What do you think the temperature is in the Tribe clubhouse right now? Because before we can sort of break down Clev, let's talk about how we got here. Right, Zach is still optioned. Mm-hmm. And, I threw the tweet out there being because the Indians basically said, we don't have an opportunity for Zach Plesac at the major league level right now. Bull fucking shit. Yes, you do. If Zach Plesac joined the Cleveland Indians rotation right now,
theoretically they do.
No, they do. They do.
I believe they have 5 starters as we sit here today right now.
5 bodies, yes.
Yes, they have 5 starting pitchers. And if we were to go,
none of those 5 starting pitchers have a whip that's lower than Zach Plesac's.
That's fine. That's fine.
So I'm just saying, just give me the real reason. I don't even think that you have to throw them under the bus. Because people were like, oh, what do you expect the Indians to be like? We hated your Instagram video and you blaming the media for all this and you making a video while you were driving. They're not going to say that. But there are ways to say that without saying that.
And that's what they've done. And that's why I responded to you with what I responded to you with in that tweet was, they don't have an opportunity for Zach Plesac right now. Why? Well, because they've got young phenom Tristan McKenzie, who just came up and showed you what 96 and command of a slider can do if you're confident.
Listen to episode 189.
That's earned him another start. Earning himself another start takes away the opportunity to have a Zach Plesac up there. And it also gives them all of the bases they need to tell you that we don't have an opportunity for him right now. Why don't you have an opportunity for him right now? Because he went against team and league protocol. We levied a punishment. And when we brought a guy up to fill his role, that guy performed. And that guy earned himself an opportunity, therefore taking away or removing any potential existing opportunity for Mr. Plesac right now under these specific circumstances where he's being punished for not following protocol, team and league, and the arrival of Tristan McKenzie and the performance of Tristan McKenzie is also what is factored into this decision. That is exactly what is going on. And that's why I said the Instagram video did him 0 favors.
None.
Because nobody had anything to say about Mike Clevinger going down and trying to do the right thing and behave the right way. And because he didn't give anybody to say anything about, right? He didn't give you any bulletin board material. And the Indians organization, very appreciative of that.
Mm-hmm.
When the other guy, when Young Sack shows up on IG Live while driving his vehicle, there's a lot of folks who caught on to that. There's a lot of folks who had an issue with that. And as we see in this world, if you've already put yourself like under the microscope, under the magnifying glass, there's people who are looking to fry you under the summer sun like a fucking ant if you give them the opportunity to. And that's what the media did, is they crushed him for the video, blah, 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 blah. But the organization probably felt the same way to an extent. Like, you can't go and do that shit, man. Like, you got to come here, you got to wear it, take it on the chin, and keep your mouth shut, and then keep it moving. And the veteran here, Mike Clevenger, he did that. But what Mike Clevenger has that Plesac does not have is just that, Jared, that veteran status to an extent. So if you tell your Clevenger that you're holding him down so that you can get controllability of him for another year, I'll see you in court.
Yeah.
That's how that's going to go. I'll see you in court.
Yep.
But when you have a young guy like Plesac with controllability still very much a thing in his realm, and you have a perceived young guy mistake with the Instagram video and blah, 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 blah. Well, now you have firepower. You have ammo if you're the Indians when it comes to arguing why you made the decision to keep Plesac down, why you are continuing to keep him down. And then when he comes back, after you now have the controllability for another year, you won't have anything to answer to, because Plesac would have had time to deal with his mistakes, make them right, and then come back up and help the team win a championship.
Yeah. I just don't know. What do you put the odds at that we even see Plesac at the major league level again this year?
Strong, very strong.
Okay. All right. As long as we're on the same page there, that like he, well,
that's what I said. He'll be back. Like, yeah. Let's not get this twisted. He'll be back. And the only way he's not back, Jared, for whatever reason, is if everybody in place right now continues to just perform at an undeniable rate where you get to a point where you're almost considering like, yo, can we mess up the juju in that room right now? Like, do we want to do that? Is that something we want to do? So unless that happens, Plesac's going to be back and he's going to be pitching for the Cleveland Indians. He's going to be helping them get to and through the postseason.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like, I'm looking at it now, like the idea that you could entertain Carrasco going to the bullpen, which, yep, is something that's happened before. Yep. You know, it's his, if you look at the game log, six innings, 4 1/3, 4 1/3, 3 1/3. So he's kind of
regressed a little.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Plucko struggled a little bit. Carrasco has regressed a little bit. I mean, like, there could be opportunities for Plesac to, you know, have his redemption. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with the Cleveland Indians. But breaking news, Walker Buehler to the injured list with a blister on his pitching hand. That sucks because he had just started to like turn a corner. Didn't get off to a hot start originally, but his last couple of starts, he was really starting to look like the Walker Buehler that you're accustomed to seeing every fifth day. So that sucks for the Dodgers, who could probably just call up another dude that throws 98 and what has like a two seamer that fucking goes left to right for like 6 feet.
Hey Chico, when's the last time you threw a fucking bullpen, pal?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, like, they can just, it doesn't matter. I mean, like if you're the Dodgers, you want to get that thing taken care of. You don't want it to be a recurring issue where it keeps popping up. And, you know, remember it was, what was that? I think it was like 2016, 17 when like blisters were just fucking going wild.
Oh, that's right around the same time, Jared, that the physical makeup of the baseball started to change too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right around that time.
That's weird.
Yeah. But right now you got the Dodgers at 22. They still haven't lost double digit games yet. They're 22 and 9.
And let's put this in context of getting to the postseason. Also, the idea that they're kicking around a bubble, which would, you know, render home field advantage completely moot.
Yes.
So if you're the Dodgers and you've got the stranglehold on the division that you do, is there any thought to when stuff like this pops up for Walker Buehler? Look, hey, bud, from here on out, it's going to be sim games for you until we've got that thing completely taken care of. Like, we don't want to run the risk of another hotspot popping up in a week or two from now in the middle of September where we have to shelf you again and keep you down, keep you, you know, not working for 10 days or so, and then try to fire you back up at the most pivotal point in the season. Is there any thought to that? Is there any thought to, if this continues to happen, where guys start to pop up with little nicks and bangs, and you're the Dodgers, do you just tell them to take a couple weeks off and we'll see you towards the middle of September to ramp you back up and make sure you're ready to go for October?
I think, yeah, I mean, but even still, like so here's the thing with the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers have a plus 77 run differential.
Stupid.
The next best team, Dallas's Oakland A's, plus 41.
41.
So okay. There's a huge gap. I mean, like, the Dodgers are essentially twice as good as the next best team in Major League Baseball. But that being said, they only hold a 4-game lead over the Padres. Like, you would think with a team that's twice as good as the next best team in Major League Baseball, that they would be running away with the division. They'd be 9.5 games up and really putting some distance between themselves and the rest of the pack, which has honestly been the story in the NL West for years now. It's always been like the Dodgers are going to win close to 100 games. They're going to finish 15 games better than everyone else, at least. And then you're going to have like a second place team that's clinging to a near 500 record, and then a bunch of shit teams in the NL West. Well, not the case anymore. You're going to have the Padres are making the playoffs. Like, the Padres, you will see Padres baseball in October, which is fucking awesome.
Yes.
And then after that, you know, the Rockies are still a maybe. They're a game above 500. But yeah.
As it sits right now, dude, come on. As it sits right now, Jared, you've got how many teams coming out of the West? You got 4 fucking teams coming out of the NL West.
You get the Giants in the playoffs?
Buddy. That's just what it is.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. That's not me wanting them in the playoffs. That's not me thinking it would be great to have them in the playoffs. That is the reality of the situation. Atlanta Braves, Miami Marlins, Chicago Cubs, St. Louis Cardinals, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Diego Padres, and then the two next best teams in the National League are the Colorado Rockies and the San Francisco Giants.
If you, you're a betting man, right?
I've dabbled.
How good would you feel about, or what would your willingness level be to slap a Dallas Braden unit on a futures bet for Mike Yastrzemski winning the National League MVP?
I mean, he's hot.
I mean, if it's not Mookie, it's Mike Yastrzemski.
Yeah, I don't. Ooh.
Who else is it? Max Fried? Tatis?
It's got to be Tatis. And I was going to say, Fried just not in this season. He's not going to get that love. Not going to happen. And I can respect that. Honestly, I can respect it because you're.
Who's not going to get the love? Fried?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. But
this would be about an offensive player being able to put a team on their back. And just carrying their club. I just don't know. I mean, the Giants making the postseason obviously starts to give credence to the performance from Yaz.
But I also think that we've moved past that idea that you have to be a playoff team. Like, look at Mike Trout. I mean, like, the years that Mike Trout, like, how many years did the Angels make the playoffs?
That takes him being the best player on planet Earth. Like, that it has literally taken the best player in the game to perform like the best player in the game for him to get the acknowledgement that an MVP would get. So if he has even a tick down in performance, which would still probably get him the MVP, I don't know that he gets that love and attention because he's just been so much better than everybody else.
Yeah.
If he's on a winning team and is performing at a lower clip, he's still getting that love.
You know who I made as my futures bet yesterday for American League MVP?
Who?
Just throw a guess out there. He's one of our guys.
Shane Bieber.
I like the idea.
Did he just punch out 14 again?
His last time out, he had 10, I think.
10. That was a DeGrom. Another fucking 14 piece.
Yeah. Bieber has made 7 starts this year. He's struck out at least 10 batters in 5 of them. And the other 2, he struck out 8 in each of them. So he's pretty good. I don't know. I mean, it's just my opinion. You don't have to agree with me, but I my opinion is that Shane Bieber is very good. So we'll see what happens there. I think that there's a chance that if he doesn't win the MVP, he'll finish top 5. Top 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got him top 5 for MVP.
I can handle that.
Yeah. That'd be fucking boss. The White Sox. This is a team that I had White Sox fans reach out to me. I think it was sort of like when the Padres were on their winning streak and White Sox fans were being like, why aren't people as excited about the White Sox as they are the Padres, when you could make the case that over the White Sox hot stretch, they were a better team than the Padres were? And I was like, well, there's a couple reasons why. Number one, Luis Robert is not yet Tatis territory.
No.
Fernando Tatis Jr. is an electric factory, like MVP candidate, as we just mentioned. And they also had the fucking Slam Diego thing. Like, you hit 4 grand slams in a row and 5 grand slams in 6 games, people are going to start paying attention to what the fuck is up with that team. And the White Sox, I think when they were playing the Cubs, like that's a big deal in Chicago. But if you want national attention, I think it all started with the unwritten rule stuff with Chris Woodward and Fernando Tatis Jr., because now you transcend just your own market and your own division. Like, anyone that, you know, you get people get upset. Baseball fans get upset about the mistreatment of one of the game's young stars. And that sort of was the exact moment where it was like, Tatis Jr. hits a grand slam. Everyone's backing him, saying, play your game, do your thing. And then it was just grand slam, grand slam, grand slam, game off, grand slam. I mean, they had all the momentum. Like, that's why everyone was on the Padres' dick, and it was rightfully so. But the White Sox, they deserve some love too. This is, what do you think, like, out of the teams, I guess we'd kind of have to look at it, but the extra teams, in terms of they go from 10 playoff teams to 16 playoff teams. Of those teams that simply would not have played October baseball this year had it not been for the expanded postseason, which one of those teams do you think has the best chance to make some noise?
I would say the Rockies.
I fucking love that pick.
And I'm going to say the Rockies because that could mean that they're not pitching in Colorado.
Right.
It also means they're not hitting in Colorado.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. I've put that together. But I think them not pitching in Colorado is a bigger deal than them not hitting in Colorado.
Yeah.
And
Charlie Blackman didn't give a fuck about not being in Colorado last night. He had a grand slam 600 fucking feet.
And with what they can do on the mound, if things are right, I that's why I feel like they could surprise some folks. That's why I feel like they could shock some people.
Speaking of shocking people.
So I like the Rockies.
Daniel Bard out of the bullpen. Love to see that.
Chundos.
Yeah.
Chundos.
Marquez, Freeland. I mean, that's a team. Gotta that, get
Gray start to figure shit out.
Yep. I'm with you. I think that's one of those teams that they could surprise some people. And more so than a team like the Reds, who would be substantially better if they had a bullpen, like substantially better if they had a bullpen. Offense should be nightmare fuel, and that rotation should be nightmare fuel. Like Castillo, Bauer, Gray, like who's fucking with that? Like when those guys are right, when those guys are pitching at their absolute best, like I put that up against fucking Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin last year.
That may be a little aggressive, but
not with what Bauer's doing this year.
Well, I mean,
Bauer trumps Scherzer this year. Strasburg,
well, talking about like on a whole, like this year specifically.
No. Yeah, Strasburg, Castillo, like that's a pretty good wipeout. And then you can make the case Sonny Gray is better than Corbin.
Strasburg's wrist has fallen off, so he's not
right. But if I'm saying at their like, if they're pitching this year,
everybody got
yeah. Like that three, it's like I like that Reds rotation a lot. And that's why I picked them to win the division, because I was like, oh, fuck. Like they just added Nick Castellanos. Added Moustakas. I would still
take that Nats three-headed monster over the Reds three-headed monster, but I'm not.
Well, because now they have the experience.
Well, I wouldn't be as quick to – I'm not dismissing that rotation. I'm not dismissing –
No, for sure.
Those three dudes against – the Nats three guys. That's not what I'm just saying. You asked me if I was a bet man and if I was going to take one of those groups to take me to the promised land, I'm probably taking the Nats.
Yeah.
That's
experience.
Yeah. I just think that just kind of putting a bow on the Rockies again, you get these guys. Look, cause I think David Dahl has been down for a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
You get all those guys healthy and clicking again. I saw that lineup early on, and it's a strong fucking lineup from top to bottom, man. It is. It's a strong lineup. The first four or five guys are problems to deal with. So you get a pitching staff that can handle them, or you get a pitching staff that can help them out. I like the Rockies' chance.
Blackman, Murphy.
Make some noise.
Arenado, Story.
Story. Dahl.
McMahon,
Hampson,
that team.
Hampson, yeah. Guy fucking flies.
I am a big time proponent of the Colorado Rockies in 2020. Even if they have kind of been like slip sliding, that's a team that I would love to see figure it all the fuck out. Feltman's, are you a Feltman's guy, Dallas?
I've slowly become a Feltman's guy. You gotta understand, this is, you know. East Coast, right? These guys are out on the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
So for me to get weenies all the way over here,
big ween,
better be fucking good. Feltman's of Coney Island. You understand? This is the world's first fucking hot dog, Jared. 1867. Old Chucky Feltman, the inventor of the glizzy.
Mm.
The glizzy. What a name. What? The Feltman's is also a military veteran run business.
I actually did not know that.
Yeah, true story. They actually they revived the business back in 2015. The founders, Michael and Joe, they revived their brand in honor of their late brother, Jimmy, who was unfortunately tragically perished in 9/11. And when I say veteran-owned, I fucking mean it. These are hardcore vets, ladies and gentlemen. 30-plus years in uniform, 113 months collectively deployed overseas, defending our way of life. And with Joe deploying three times to combat after his brother was killed in 9/11, you can understand where the dedication with this family lies. And the Quinn brothers, diehard Mets fans too. So yeah, a little psycho, obviously. That's okay. We're loving the glizzies. Did you know that Joe's actually a member of the Seven Line Army?
Really?
Fucking fact.
Huh?
Yeah. COVID ruined the Seven Line Army meeting, because that was going down, Jared. That was going down.
Huh.
So here's the thing. Quinns have put together an annual Mets game in honor of their brother Jimmy every year. And obviously they can't be at the ballpark this year, so they've got a little virtual event going. That's right. What they're asking is for you to go on the Feltman's website, order some glizzies, and watch the Mets play the Blue Jays on September 11th. 9/11. Post a photo to your preferable social media channel, Instagram, tweet box, whatever you got, but use the hashtag never forget 9/11. Starting 9 listeners, you're going to get a discount off their entire order, right? Everything you order, you're going to get a discount. Go to momentsofconeyisland.com. That's what you got to do. You get 10% off with ID.me at checkout. So you're going to feltmansofconeyisland.com. Service members, veterans, and first responders, you all receive 10% off. Starting 9 fans with ID.me at checkout, you also will receive a discount. Get your glizzy in you. Go Feltmans.
Love that. Some superstar appreciation time. Got to talk about Gerrit Cole.
Ooh, tee it off, Jared. I know you are just salivating right now. You've had Cole on the tip of your tongue.
Yeah. Yep. So Gerrit Cole pitched yesterday against the Atlanta Braves.
He threw yesterday.
Yeah, he was there. Three homers. That's just the second time since being traded from the Pittsburgh Pirates that he's given up three homers in a game.
How much did the Yankees pay him to give up three homers yesterday?
$222,222.
So, like, that's for the whole year he got paid? Or is that?
No, that was just for that one game.
Oh.
Just that one game. And in the first inning, actually, welcome back Ronald Acuna Jr.
Hey-o!
Returns from the injured list. He had a home run that went 473 feet.
Yeah. Look out in Buckhead, because that thing's still fucking coming.
473 feet. That was a bomb. And it was actually, I don't know if you saw this, Sarah Langs.
Yep.
She was at Jay Hay's wedding, right?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Can't confirm. Yes.
I think she was.
Okay.
I think she was. Because I remember I was like, this is Jay Hay's wedding, and there's just like a bunch of baseball people here that are doing baseball things at the table, and everyone's cool with it because it's like, we all know. Like, you know that I know, and he knows. We all know. It's not that big of a fucking deal. She tweeted out that it was the longest home run Gerrit Cole has ever given up in his career.
Damn.
Yeah. He also gave up a home run to Marcelo Zuna. That one went 468 feet. And if you can imagine, that was the second longest home run that he's ever given up in his career. So I think more so than anything, we have to, you know, round of applause for Gerrit Cole. You know, he hadn't lost a regular season game since May of 2019. It's been a long time. That regular season win streak, 28 starts. He was 20-0, a 1.97 ERA, 270 strikeouts, and 182 and two-thirds innings with just 37 walks. Opponents over that same span, they hit 176.
Oh, come on.
With a 562 OPS.
Give me the rest of it.
225 on base percentage and 337 slugging. It is something to behold. That streak, I don't think we'll see time. And if we do see it again, it's probably going to be Gerrit Cole who does it. And if not, I would imagine it's probably going to be Jacob deGrom, who actually is the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. Because my favorite stat that came out of yesterday, I think this was Alyssa Rose who brought it to my attention. I did my research, and Gerrit Cole had given up more home runs in the first three innings of yesterday's start against the Braves than Jacob deGrom has allowed all year.
Damn, son.
Jacob deGrom has only allowed two home runs this year. That's crazy town.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he goes out there and shoves, obviously, just once again proving that he is the best pitcher in baseball. Yeah.
The 20 and 0 part of that.
Yep.
28 starts, 20-0.
Yep.
He was around to receive 20 decisions.
Yep.
Don't get hung up on the 20 wins part. That's what you want out of your ace. That's what you want out of your frontline guy. 28 ball games started. He was pitching long enough to factor into the decision. Obviously, they were wins. That's why the streak is even more impressive, is because it wasn't 28 ball games in a row that saw him factor into 20 decisions. These were 20 dominant victories for Gerrit Cole. And when you want your guy to get deep into a ball game, and we talk about wins and losses and what do they mean, this is still an area in where you can find value in the win or loss for your starting pitcher, is he's giving you enough work to factor into that win, as opposed to just being the guy who's going to wear the loss when he comes out after five innings. Gerrit Cole is, by every measure, the embodiment of what you want in your frontline guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you look at it, like 182 and two thirds innings, like, that's a full season for a lot of guys.
No doubt.
And he goes out there and goes 20-0 over that span. And it's like, that had the start date and end date been the beginning of the season to the end of the season, yeah, you're looking at an unbeaten 20-game winner.
Sure, I think I had like 193 innings or something like that, like the last year that
total?
I was healthy.
Oh, okay.
2010. And I don't know, like 100 strikeouts, maybe, if that. And definitely nowhere near 20 wins. Like, I've only got 26 in my entire fucking career.
I mean, basically, you won, objectively speaking, Dallas Braden, you won more major league games than Gerrit Cole did on his streak.
So, I mean, if you're comparing Gerrit Cole's streak and me collectively, I'm the more winning pitcher.
You said that you pitched 193 innings that year. It was actually 192 and two thirds. So you did not reach
193 plateau.
Yeah, no, you didn't. But you did strike out 113 batters.
Oh, there you go.
See, yeah,
it's a solid game. Yeah. Nine.
And 3.5 ERA. That's actually really good. And your FIP was 380. So you know that it was legit. You weren't just like lucking in anything. And what I'm most impressed by, the 116 WHIP. I mean, you were, that was a good year for you, Dallas.
Limit the traffic, Jared. Limit the traffic. Now
six.
Now do yourself and go find that black ink in that year.
Oh, two complete game shut pieces. Damn. One of them being a perfect game. But you also, how have we never talked about the second CG shut piece?
What was that? Was that the Mariners?
You threw five complete games that year, which is crazy. Five complete games. One of them was the perfect game. Two of them were complete game shutouts. Let's see. Let's take a look at these. You had the perfect game. You had a complete game against the White Sox where you gave up two earned runs. You had a complete game.
Talking bad shit to Ozzie Guillen, too.
You had a complete game, one earned run against the Mariners. And then you had a complete game shutout against the Rangers.
Was that at home or was that on the road?
That was in Texas. Okay. Yeah. Tejas.
This is when they tried to pull me out. I had fucking glass in my fucking hand.
Two, three, four. So they must have credited you. Oh, yeah. So you threw an eight-inning complete game against the Angels. So kind of a pussy move by you.
That was the game after the perfect game.
Yeah. You threw eight innings, four earned runs. Yikes.
Gave up a fucking – we were winning that ball game, too. And I gave up a fucking 3-2 through a fucking slider. Just hung. And Matsui shit all over. Oh, I was so pissed.
Yeah. April 6th against the Mariners, seven innings, four hits, one earned run, 10 strikeouts.
Oh, that, hey, you know what's funny? That's the game. So they asked me, oh, this is great. They asked me after the game, like, you know, what was working, what felt great. And I was just like, well, look, as the major league leader in strikeouts. I just want to, and everybody started dying. Because that's the first time I had ever punched out 10 guys in a game in the major leagues.
Yeah.
That was the last time I ever punched out 10 guys in the major leagues. But it was also the first time and the only time in the major leagues that I led the major leagues in strikeouts. So I made sure that everybody had that in their article, the major league leader in strikeouts, Dallas Braden.
I mean, only this podcast could turn an appreciation of Garrett Cole's segment into an appreciation of Dallas Braden's segment.
Hey, I didn't do it. You did. I didn't do it.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, only this podcast could do that. I'm taking full responsibility for what happened here.
That's how fucking flexible we are.
We need to get some rapid fire thoughts here.
Let's do it.
Unless you have some more thoughts on Garrett Cole, because I don't.
No, I'm all I'm good. I'm all stocked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being epic disaster, how bad is it that the Angels?
Horrible, and I don't even know what the rest of the question is.
And Mike Trout are likely to finish closer to the worst record in baseball than they are to make the postseason in a year where 16 teams are making the postseason.
I don't even know what to make of this.
Also, the caveat that they also, I mean, they went for it in the offseason. They spent a fuck ton of money on Rendon.
Yeah. Well, and look, let's be real, right? Obviously, the roster looks different today than it did early on. There's the hits that they've taken regarding their pitching staff has been well documented. That's a fucking nightmare. Just a nightmare. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's probably, I don't know if one epic complete in total, but I've got a, probably maybe a 3. Like, it's not good. It is not good where you continually have.
They literally bent the rules to be like, let's get Trout in the postseason this year. Like, let's make sure of it. Like, you know, we got to showcase these fucking stars. Like, people thought we weren't going to have baseball this year. We were going to have a strike. People were going to just sit out for the whole season because of labor arguments between each other. You know what? We're going to come back with a bang, and we're going to get the Angels in the postseason. We're going to get Trout full frontal for all these baseball fans. Nope.
Didn't happen. Not happening. Yeah. It's brutal because the game deserves, like, look at how excited we are about the potential of watching Giolito in the postseason.
Yeah.
And what that means for him moving forward.
He just texted me back now from like 2 nights ago when he threw the no-hitter. He's just now catching up on text messages.
Oh, yeah.
1:30 p.m. on Thursday, he threw the no-hitter, what, on Tuesday night?
That's so funny. As you're saying that, he just texted me as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He said his response, because my text to him was, and I quote, "You big dicked bastard. I am fully erect right now." and he responded with, "Let me see it." No, I'm kidding. He said, "Fuck yeah, man. 1-4 pitch walk away from joining your ass."
Yeah.
So, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
But how do you not, like, how are you not excited about watching that dude in the postseason? And if you are, think about how Angels fans have felt their entire fucking life with Mike Trout in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking, Jared. It's heartbreaking.
It is.
So you know what? Fuck it. I'm taking my 3 away and I'm going 1. It's an epic and total failure on the part of the Angels. And baseball. Manfred, you should have saw the signs. If 16 teams wasn't going to be enough, you got to throw more fucking teams in there to get Mike Trout in the playoffs. I don't, round robin tournament, fuck it. Everybody show up in Texas. High noon. We're playing baseball till the last team falls. Let's do that. Whatever we got to do to get Mike Trout in there.
I agree. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster when you have 10 teams go to 16 teams. And you still can't get this fucking guy in the playoffs. Nice. And that's, I don't think there are going to be some things that stick from this year. Like the universal DH, I think we've seen hitters go to the plate for the last time.
Pitchers.
Yep. Pitchers. Yeah. Go to the plate for the last time. But in terms of like the playoffs being expanded, that we're not going to, I mean, this is not something that's going to stick, I don't think.
It might not stick this year, but this is them just sort of piping in that buttery scent in the movie theater. They're just getting your appetite up, Jared. They're just getting your appetite up, because then what they're going to do is they're going to come out with the main course a few years from now. and that's going to be two more teams.
Ooh.
And so now that appetizer that you were like, I said, yeah. Oh shit. What's coming right behind? Two more fucking teams. We got two more teams, expanded playoffs. I am into this. So that's what baseball. I pray to God, Uncle Manfred is slow playing us that way, because that'll be so exciting for him to drop two new cities on the sport. Two more teams.
What do you got? Nashville?
Nashville has been kicked around so much, and the success of the AAA teams there, I think, is enough for the league to acknowledge. And look, Nashville is home to a lot of rich and powerful people who enjoy baseball, and baseball ownership as a group, they're into rich, powerful people joining their group. And I feel like that would definitely be a destination.
Mm.
And I also think Las Vegas is a destination that people are kicking around, because it's just tough to look at the Vegas Knights and the success that they had very early on. And sure, winning helps everything,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like there's a model there to be looked at.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a team in Vegas. That'd be cool. It'd be a good excuse for us to get back out there.
Oh my God. Oh my God, Jared. I pity the general manager, and I pity the training staff that has to keep those guys on the field in Vegas.
Yeah. I think we already answered this next question already. Maybe you have a different answer. I don't know. Which 500-ish team do you find to be the most dangerous as we approach September? The Rockies, Giants, Brewers, Cardinals, Orioles, Blue Jays?
Yeah. Again, we did talk about this, and it's the Rockies, because I feel like they have the most realistic opportunity to stick, you know, to win a series out of those teams. I feel like the Rockies are the team that's in the strongest position to be put up against any potential postseason team right now and win two out of three.
Yeah. I also think that the Cardinals deserve a nod in the discussion. The Blue Jays, I'm actually interested to see what the Blue Jays do with the trade deadline, because if they're in the market for pitching and they can stick it somewhere.
Well, they are, buddy. They are in the market for pitching, Jared. And
yeah.
Taijuan Walker.
Oh, just went over there, huh?
Is now a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Breaking news. Taijuan Walker traded from the Seattle Mariners to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah. I don't know that still like moves the needle for me, to be honest with you, but.
Well, they're in the market for pitching, and they just acquired a pitcher.
Yeah. I don't know that they're done though. I don't know if that's it. I don't know if the Blue Jays are like, we got Taijuan Walker, so look the fuck out. Like, I don't think that's what we're looking at here. But we'll see. I do think that out of that group, the Rockies and the Cardinals and the Blue Jays, trade deadline pending, are the answers to that question. And I'm sure that there are people are like Orioles fans, like, what the fuck about us? It's like, well, your pitching sucks. I don't know that you guys are confident in like Alex Cobb taking you to the promised land. But Santander, you can't sleep on that. I mean, like, that dude has been the unsung hero of the American League this year. He's having a fucking awesome year, and he's a lot of fun to watch. How good are the Cubs really? 18-11, best record in the NL Central, only a +4 run differential behind the Cardinals and 12th in the MLB.
Where does that +4 run differential, why? Why is it +4? Let's talk about that.
Okay. You could make the case
competition
that, yeah, I mean, like, they play in a really good division. You can make the case that their offense hasn't been overwhelming, but has been good enough to get the job done on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. 'Cause now that +4, that must have been yesterday, 'cause they're +3. I mean, like, for a team that's 18-12, they've They've scored 138 runs, but they've allowed 135. So if you look at the other teams in the Central, you look at the Cubs, 138 runs scored. The Cardinals, 87, but they haven't played as many games. The Brewers, 111. The Reds, 110. The Pirates, 105. You look at other divisions where it's like the Padres, 166. The Rockies, 158. The Giants, 159. Even the D-backs, 138, which would be the last place D-backs in the NL West have scored the same amount of runs as the Cubs. So, like I said, they have scored enough runs to be 18-12, but they're not blowing people out. And
got to keep the other team off the board.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I never really looked at it like that, but how good are the Cubs really?
Right. Is it a mirage?
That's where like the short season is going to fuck you a little bit, because like I do believe that run differential is the best indicator of like predicting future in like which teams are going to actually be the best, where a team's going to finish over a 162 game season. But now, you just don't have the time to really assess that. So is it a mirage? Is this just a small sample size? It could be a little bit of both, honestly. It could be a little bit of both.
And is there anything to say that their record doesn't look a little different, this division doesn't look a little different, if Cincinnati doesn't struggle the way they did
out of
the gate and that bullpen doesn't shit itself the way they did?
Fuck yeah. I mean, like that. But for as good as, you know, we want to put it on the bullpen and everything, the Reds have only scored 110 runs too. So it's like their offense could be better. The bullpen could be way better.
Right. But that's my point about the optics of the Chicago Cubs and their record and where they're at in the division right now being a mirage, is if some of those early performances kind of go the way that we may have expected them to go, if Iglesias isn't blowing save after save early on, does that look different?
Right. So. I think it does. And I think it's a huge factor in where the Cubs are and the perception of the Cubs, I guess, this year. So we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But it is a very valid question to ask. I'm sorry, Carl, but it is. It's a valid question to ask. Are the Cubs as legit as they would appear to be in the NL Central standings and I guess the National League overall? Do we get any final thoughts here? Mookie Betts, final thought for me, Mookie Betts is not playing in game one of this doubleheader.
Really?
Yes. So the Dodgers are playing. Mookie Betts is sitting out for game one of the doubleheader.
Final thoughts for me would be, I hope everybody listening can find a way to try to make some sense out of everything that you're seeing, everything that you're hearing, and just keep in mind that the players that you root for, they bleed just like you and me. They're human beings with real lives and real life issues that they have to deal with away from the baseball field. And sometimes just getting to the baseball field, as we heard Uncle Cliffy talk about, can be an adventure in itself. So we've all got a lot of heavy shit on our mind right now. We're all trying to do the very best we can with the circumstances that we're all surrounded by, that we're all in. So just try to think a little more positive today, if you can. Keep your glass a little more than half full today.
Well said.
We out.